And now we go to an interview with Joe Bradhurst. Joe.
Good morning, Montreal. Welcome to CKUT. I am joined this morning by Wayne Madsen of the WayneMadsenReport.com. Get a pen. We are going to go through his site a little bit this morning and check out some of the current events that are happening in Washington, D.C. Good morning, Mr. Madsen.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
Fine.
Yeah? So Wayne Madsen runs the WayneMadsenReport.com. It is very popular right now. I suggest that all of our listeners visit the site. It's WayneMadsenReport.com. So let's talk about some of the current things that are happening in Washington, D.C. As I look at your page, we're talking about Karl Rove and the indictments that are about to be handed down. What do you think about that?
Well, I got to say, after being in this town for as long as I have, there's a certain noise factor right now, which would indicate that we're on the verge of a major movement on the case of the leak of the CIA agent and her network's identity by Robert Novak, among other journalists. Right now, where it stands, it looks like there is some sort of horse trading going on between the special prosecutor, Patrick Fitzgerald, and the people who have been targeted in this investigation. And all indications are that there are three members, two current members of the Bush administration, one former member. There, Karl Rove, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff, and also the person called Bush's brain.
Yeah, jackal. He's a jackal.
Yeah, he's an amazing person that he evaded since the time of Watergate in the Nixon administration. He's been engaged in all kinds of dirty political tricks, some of which were blatantly illegal, and he's managed to evade the law. But it looks like this time he's met his match in this special prosecutor. Also being targeted, of course, are Vice President Cheney's Chief of Staff, Louis Scooter Libby, and former White House Press Secretary Ari Fleischer. Apparently, they've all received what are known as target letters from the prosecutor. That indicates I'm going to be indicting you. They're usually sent to the attorney. And this is just basically a last chance for them to enter into a plea bargain arrangement. It doesn't mean that they're going to get any sort of immunity, and I understand right now the last word was that Rove had decided at the 11th hour to testify before the grand jury again, which may be an indication that he knows he perjured himself in previous testimonies.
That's what they're going to try and get him on, right? Are they going to try and get him on perjury? Or
what I understand is this particular prosecutor probably will not touch the original violation, which was a violation of the Intelligence Identities Protection Act, which was passed in the early 80s at the urging, ironically, of then Vice President George H.W. Bush, who was upset about a magazine that had published the names of some CIA agents. This is uncharted territory for a prosecutor. There's never been a case involving that particular act, so there's no case law. But one thing that the prosecutor does understand is flat-out perjury, obstruction of justice, lying to federal law enforcement officials, and I understand all those charges may be wrapped up in the package that he will be announcing very shortly.
They had reported that perhaps there was a bomb threat against Fitzgerald. Is that true or not?
Well, there's an awful lot of information, disinformation, I have to say. I'm not sure whether any of this is coordinated. Certainly any time you've got Karl Rove involved in anything,
yes,
you got to be very wary about disinformation. There was disinformation that the Patrick Fitzgerald is the U.S. attorney for Northern Illinois, based in Chicago. He's had some pretty high level cases. He has one against the former Republican governor of Illinois, George Ryan, a corruption case, and he also prosecuted the former publisher of the Chicago Sun Times. Interestingly enough, who was the former boss for Robert Novak on an unrelated case having to do with some stock manipulation and stock fraud. But he's on loan to the Justice Department in Washington. So the grand jury that's been meeting for just about 2 years now is based in Washington at the U.S. courthouse. There's nothing going on in Chicago. There was I saw a report saying that he received a threat in Chicago. I'm very suspicious about any reports coming out because there is a nest of conspiracy theorists in the city of Chicago, and absolutely. I think this disinformation comes from those sources.
So, do you think that there's an actual chance that, you know, is this really coming down, do you think, or is this just a show?
Well, I think with this particular prosecutor, even though this prosecutor is a U.S. attorney, was appointed by President Bush, he's a Republican, he's known as a no-nonsense individual. And the one thing I understand that where he'll go after people are for things like perjury and obstruction of justice. That's sort of his area of specialty. And if any of that has occurred, I cannot see him being pressured politically to drop this case. I think there's just too much at stake. I mean, the seriousness of the underlying crime was that a covert counterproliferation group within the CIA was exposed because of Ambassador Joe Wilson's op-ed in the New York Times, where he questioned Bush's State of the Union speech, where he said that, according to British intelligence, Saddam Hussein was trying to procure uranium from Africa, particularly in this case, it was the country of Niger. And Wilson, who's an Africanist, he's a specialist in Africa, having served as ambassador to Gabon and having served in Niger also, knows a lot of people. He went over there, found out that this was based on fraudulent intelligence. It just so happened that his wife worked in the counterproliferation division as what they call a non-official cover agent. And it was at that point in time Dick Cheney said, let's do a workup on Joe Wilson. Now, you know, those kinds of words indicate that there was a criminal conspiracy, which is, again, another thing that Fitzgerald's been looking into, whether the White House conspired knowingly to out his wife and her network by releasing their names in an effort to embarrass Ambassador Wilson. But it did a lot of damage to the United States' ability to track the proliferation of nuclear materials around the world.
It's a major crime.
It's a major crime, and there was a damage assessment report done by the CIA. This was, and remember, it was the CIA that originally asked the Justice Department, made that criminal referral on the outing of Valerie Plame Wilson to Robert Novak, and that was right back in the summer of 2003. So this prosecutor has interviewed, you know, probably hundreds of witnesses, including agents at the CIA, who know fully well the damage that was caused by that particular leak. There's some information out there that one clandestine agent in another country was actually worked over, and interrogated, I guess you'd say torture if you were using the U.S. standard, and died as a result of that disclosure. So this is pretty serious. So one of the judges on the U.S. Court of Appeals, Judge David Tatel, actually saw some of this information when he made his ruling that Judith Miller of the New York Times should serve time in prison because of her refusal to testify. He said he indicated that the damage was absolutely very severe. So I think we're going to see some indictments. I think the damage that was done to the CIA was as the judge said. He thought it was very, very severe. And I'm told by people in the CIA that the damage assessment report used words like devastating effect on the agency's ability to track WMDs.
Now, you're a former employee of the NSA, right?
That's right.
And so you're talking to people that are still inside the administration. What is the assessment? What are people feeling? I mean, people got to be outraged by this. People inside these agencies. I mean, there's multiple agencies, but I mean, they must just be outraged.
Well, they are. These are the career intelligence officers who I feel, and they feel they were unfairly blamed for the failure of intelligence on 9/11. As we now know, every intelligence and federal law enforcement agency had information that was some of it very concrete about 9/11. So to blame the rank and file has really hurt morale. What we're talking about, as Bush put a former Congressman Porter Goss over to head up the CIA. Now the political people are a different story in all this. They act like nothing really has happened, but the rank and file, the career people, and from every agency, from the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the CIA, to the NSA, to the Defense Intelligence Agency, they're livid over not only what happened with the outing of the CIA network, but the current controversy surrounding a top-secret Pentagon project called Able Danger, which apparently had Mohammed Atta under surveillance in the United States as early as 1999. Several of the people involved with that have now been retaliated against for speaking to Congress about what they knew. So this is an across-the-board issue with these agencies, and I think what we're going to see with the indictments is sort of like the culmination of the anger generated since the phony intelligence was used to justify the war in Iraq. I think we're going to see a lot of people on the side of going after these administration people with as much firepower as they can muster.
All right, I'm moving down your page, and yesterday you posted a story involving the Larry Franklin scandal. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what's going on with that? This is a guy who basically passed on secrets to an AIPAC, which is an Israeli lobby organization. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about this situation and what's going on?
Right, it's sort of the other major espionage scandal in Washington, although it hasn't been getting as much press as the CIA leak. Larry Franklin was a Defense Intelligence Agency analyst. He also served in the Air Force Reserves and achieved the rank of colonel. During his active duty time, when he was called on active duty for his temporary assignments in the summer, he on several occasions was assigned to the U.S. Embassy in Tel Aviv, and it's thought that there was at that time in the early to mid 90s there was an approach made by Israeli intelligence, and he became virtually an asset for the Israelis. Franklin was assigned from the Defense Intelligence Agency to a group in the Pentagon that was instrumental in phoning up all the intelligence before the invasion of Iraq. It was called the Office of Special Plans, and it was it was run by Douglas Feith, the former deputy defense secretary for plans and policy. Franklin was accused of not only removing classified information to his home in West Virginia. I think it was some 80 or so documents were found, including top secret code word, sensitive compartmented information. That's the highest level of classification that the government has. But he was accused of passing some of these documents, some of this information on to two employees of the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, AIPAC, And now Franklin has apparently agreed to a plea bargain with the U.S. attorney who's Patrick Fitzgerald's counterpart in Eastern Virginia, Paul McNulty, and he's agreed in his guilty plea to cooperate with the government. And obviously we're going to see him testifying against the two former AIPAC officials. They were fired after this information became public about the espionage, but also he's admitted that he passed information on to a staffer at the Israeli embassy in Washington, a man named Naor Gilon, who I am told, even though his title was political officer, he was the Mossad station chief in Washington. Now he's fled the United States for Israel, and Israel, as we know, doesn't extradite.
Yeah. So he won't be extradited back.
No, I wouldn't think. But I think the more interesting aspect is if in the indictment it talks about known and unknown figures that have yet to be identified and possibly indicted. And there's a mention of a senior fellow who's an Iran analyst at a Washington think tank, and that's led to a lot of conjecture as to who that may be. And there's only a few people in the neocon camp who would fit that bill, and one of them, of course, is Michael Ledeen of the American Enterprise Institute, a colleague of Richard Perle. So,
if this
thing goes further, we're not only going to get some of the leading neocons maybe wrapped up in an investigation, but we're going to once again get it right into the White House, because Michael Ledeen is the unofficial foreign policy advisor to Karl Rove.
All right, I want to move the conversation over to DeLay, because Tom DeLay, that is the senator from Texas. This is everybody knows about the Tom DeLay the scandal, but you've brought up some interesting questions discussing the international perspective of Tom DeLay and how he could be is it possible he could be prosecuted over in Britain?
Well, it's hard to say whether he actually broke any British laws, but the fact that he his trips he would run these golfing trips to St. Andrews golf course for other members of Congress, and these of course were paid for by another indicted individual, the former GOP lobbyist Jack Abramoff, who's now being even implicated in a gangland murder in Florida of owner of a casino cruise ship.
You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, you can. And I mean, right now, I think the Republicans are in a state of denial. I don't think they've actually caught on to the fact that their people, like Tom DeLay, who had to step down as the majority leader in the House of Representatives, is facing. He's already been indicted by a Texas grand jury, two Texas grand juries for criminal conspiracy. But he's also looking at potential federal charges, because there's an ongoing federal investigation against Mr. DeLay, and that involves his relationship with Jack Abramoff. Now, British police have interviewed Margaret Thatcher, the former British Prime Minister, and wanted to know what her conversations were with DeLay. I think what we may see is something that the Clinton administration and was often charged with. They charge Al Gore for attending some sort of a fundraiser at a Buddhist temple. They never proved that anything illegal occurred there, but what we may see is the fact that there's a possibility that British money was introduced into the U.S. election campaign, and if that happened, that's illegal in the United States, and we may see at least some testimony from Margaret Thatcher in that respect, and also a member of the Scottish Parliament was also interviewed, so there may be some involvement of DeLay in taking money from Scotland as well.
Incredible. All right. I'm talking with Wayne Madsen of the WayneMadsenReport.com. I just want to cover one quick thing before we go. We don't have much time left. You ran a story called Washington Post DC's Largest Steno Pool. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, the Washington Post, of course, they ran an editorial, I should say, where they really went after Hugo Chavez in Venezuela and the new liberal Sandinista alliance in Nicaragua, and it looks like maybe Mr. Ortega may be actually coming into power through the electoral process. Of course, this has generated a lot of noise from the what I call the Latin American branch of the neocons here. And they accused, of course, they mentioned that Ortega was a child molester and a corrupt politician, and they talked about Chavez and Venezuela being an undemocratic nation. Really, what the Washington Post is doing, as they often do, is they were repeating administration talking points coming out of the State Department, where there's a nest of Cuban-American, very right-wing Cuban-Americans who don't like the smell of anything to the left of center in Latin America. They much prefer the right-wing dictators they're used to and that they support. And the Washington Post chimed right in there, which indicates that anybody that thinks the Washington Post is an independent newspaper, I called it a steno pool because them writing basically in their editorial a list of State Department neocon talking points is really what a stenographer would do, but not a journalist.
And everybody was crying about Judith Miller being in jail, but you know what? You know, maybe she should have been in jail for what she did leading up to the Iraq War.
Well, she certainly carried the administration's water, and I think the fact that she did show that she had an unusual relationship for an independent journalist with people in the vice president's office and in the administration, and I think that that also is an indication that there's an awful lot of people in this town anyway that do more stenography for the administration than they do in journalism, and God forbid if they ever did any sort of investigative journalism. That's pretty lacking in this town right now.
All right, one quick thing. I just wanted to cover one quick thing, and then we're going to go. You reported about the Weather Service and there being restrictions put on any kind of reports on weather going out. What is the deal with that?
Well, the Commerce Department runs the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration, which in turn runs the National Weather Service, and basically said that any journalists that are spoken to by people at the National Weather Service on anything ranging from, I guess, hurricanes to snowstorms, these journalists have to be pre-approved by the Commerce Department. So now we see the Bush administration obviously trying to spin the weather, politicize the weather, and this may have something to do with global warming. Maybe they don't want people at the Weather Service to tell the truth anymore about the fact we're up to the letter T now for the first time in memory in the hurricane cycle this year, and we've still got a month and a half to go. So if this may be an indication that we're sort of like the old Soviet Union. In the Soviet Union, nobody could report anything bad, and that included weather catastrophes, plane crashes, and whatnot. So it looks like the Bush administration is borrowing a page from the old Soviets when it comes to news dissemination.
Incredible. It's a Reich. Okay. I've been joined by Wayne Madsen of the WayneMadsenReport.com. I encourage all of our listeners to visit his site. If you want to be up, if you want to be like in the know as far as what's going on in D.C., it's the place to be. Thank you, Wayne, and I hope to have you on again.
Good to be with you. You bet.
Have a good day.
You too.